justice, fortitude, and temperance. To refresh our memories, these are powers that are infused into our souls supernaturally at baptism. Secondly, these moral virtues are the powers we need to first do God's will and then to satisfy our grievous obligation after loving God to love our neighbor. The virtue of prudence, about which we have spoken and I thought was worth spending the whole meditation, is a virtue essentially of the intellect, of the mind. The last three of justice, fortitude, and temperance are virtues of the will. First, a generic description of justice. And I'm drawing, by the way, as I've said, on the Catechism of the Catholic Church. Justice is the virtue that guides the human will to give God and to others what is their due. In other words, justice presumes that others have rights. By respecting those rights is my practice of justice. And of course, the first and primary being who has rights, we are not only to respect, but respond to is God. Over the centuries, the Church has used the name religion, as the virtue of justice towards God. So too is this. We may identify the first three commandments of the Decalogue as the virtues of religion. And of course, an obvious consequence. This is the foundation. In other words, we shall respect and satisfy our duties towards others only of the measure that we recognize and respond to the rights of God. The massive, what an understatement, the massive injustice towards, in one civilized nation after another, of murdering innocent unborn children, and that massive injustice is the consequence of one, once I repeat, civilized nation after another, not respecting the rights of God. You will not honor the rights of other people unless, and I would add, insofar as you both recognize and respond to the rights of God. So now we ask, what is justice towards God? You already said that is the virtue of religion. And this is highly condensed. Often pages in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which I've instructed by my Vatican superiors to boil down to the very basic essentials. There are two basic rights that God has. He has a right to be known and a right to be obeyed. Let me go on. God has a corresponding right to be spoken to and listened to. Can you imagine living with someone whom you never talk to? Or with someone who never talks to you? It's not a matter of charity. This is sheer justice. The moment we say that, we are covering the whole gamut of our faith. We go on. God once more has a right to deal with us as He wills. He has a right. He has a right to, what a safe statement, to have brought us into existence, and a corresponding right, had He so chosen, not to bring us into being. In all these cases, and each one deserves hours, even days, of prayerful reflection. In all these cases, our justice towards God implies our submission. And try to remember these, because what I'm sharing with you is the synthesis of the Catholic faith. In all the cases we've identified, our justice towards God implies our submission first to God, then to His laws, and thirdly, to His sometimes very mysterious providence in our lives. We have no rights, hear it, we have no rights over God. God has all the rights over us. And except for Him, we would not exist. And as St. Paul asks, does the clay have a right to tell the potter, well, how to shape the clay? God from all eternity planned that we should, I would like to say this, be masculine gender. You may be surprised. I give a different retreat when I speak to women. Once a person even questions, not to say denies, the existence of God, is it any wonder that Marxism, which is atheistic in its core, should have aroused the envious wills of millions of women throughout the world, demanding equal rights with men. Well, this is where we men, masculine gender, have got to use our hands. As I've said how many times, the age of 1 to the age of 16, raised in a household exclusively of women, God bless them. No man, masculine gender, is a match for a woman's will. I hope you believe me. But this is where we men come in. We have a duty to use our heads. Our humble response to God's rights as His creatures is the practice, I repeat, and underline of religion. However, other people exist in the world besides us, and we exist as a plurality of human persons, because God Himself is a plurality of divine persons. In Yahweh, in Genesis, having created the rest of the visible world, on the sixth day declared, "Let us make man and watch the pronoun. To our image and likeness." If there was and is one religion that believes there's only one God, it is Judaism. In the opening chapters of Genesis, God speaks of Himself in the plural, for the obvious reason, because God is a plurality of persons, but only one divine nature. So we ask, what is our justice towards others? Our justice towards others recognizes their rights as human beings, always in view of the common good. What an important statement. People surely have rights, but they have rights not only as individuals, they have rights as members of a community. In other words, that what claims another person may make, and is where we have to constantly guard ourselves, not to submit to the demands of individuals, unless those demands, which may be justified, are in the interest. In the interests of the community, of the family, of the parish, of the company, of the diocese. In other words, in respecting the justice that we owe others, you must realize justice is not just responding to the individual, shall I add the adjective, selfish rights of persons. Any person, by definition, is an individual, intelligent being. Justice is, shall I say, justified only when the rights of another person are for the interests of not just that one individual, who can be very demanding. And by now, you fathers, you must know how demanding a child can be, and I hope you believe me, long before that child reaches the age of reason. I hope you believe me. You don't even have to, I don't say reach the age of reason. You don't have to even use your reason to make demands. Do you agree? How selfish human beings can be. And as a consequence, how wise and prudent we must be in our practice of justice, so as not, because of the strong, selfish demands of an individual, in the process, we fail to respect the rights of, I repeat, a family, a parish, a diocese, or, for us Catholics, of the Church. Before I close this virtue, let me say a few words about supernatural justice. There is built into each human being by nature a desire to have my own personal rights respected. Thus, does a person who I'm speaking to have a right to know what's on my mind? Does a person whom I'm talking to have a right to the truth? Does he? Yes. And that's the essence of lying. Withholding the truth from someone who has a right to it. However, remember, we are saying in both the theological virtues and here the moral virtues, they are elevated, supernatural, superhuman. And there are claims, oh, I wish that God knows better the hours I could spend, one retreat, 3 days, would be too short to discourse on the supernatural virtue of justice. Do human beings have a right to know the truth, who is the incarnate God? Do all human beings have a right to know Jesus Christ? Yes or no? Do they? And we, thanks to God's goodness, we know Jesus Christ. I'm going to be hitting this until the last conference of the retreat. Either as a result of these days, your zeal to share your faith with others is deepened, heightened. Be more zealous. What I've been saying more than once, I'm wasting your time. Those that don't have our faith have a right to it. Am I still clear? And God puts no one, coincidentally or by chance, into our lives. How much and at what length and what detail I could discourse on justice as a supernatural virtue. We said God has a right to be spoken to. What is another word for speaking to God? It is prayer. It is sheer justice. Hear it. Sheer justice that we owe to God to pray. How we need to examine our consciences. And you know as well as I, people can be in our lives who can be very demanding, demanding of our time, demanding of our attention, demanding of our will, discourse, talking to them and with them. But the most serious duty we have is to speak to God. And correspondingly, if someone is talking, are we bound in justice to hear the person? Yes. Next question. Are we bound in justice to listen to a person? Pardon me, not necessarily. It all depends on what that person is saying. Oh, the wisdom of knowing how to excuse yourself from a conversation. We go on. If the first moral virtue of the will is justice. Justice towards God, justice towards others. Respecting and responding to the rights of God and the rights of others. The next is fortitude. My synthesis in the Catechism of the Catholic Church is a little long, but let me first read what I have. What is fortitude? Fortitude is a virtue that regulates our fears. Period. It assures stability and constancy and doing what is good, even in the face of difficulties. Again, period. The virtual fortitude enables us to resist fear, even hear it, even the fear of death, and to suffer everything in the defense of our practice of the faith. I think it's worth repeating. The virtual fortitude enables us to resist fear, even the fear of death, and to suffer everything in the defense of our practice of the faith. That synthesis is one statement of the infallible church, of what we Catholics should practice in our, dare I use it, cowardly age. One more sentence. We are sustained by the promise of our Lord who told us, quote, "In the world you will face persecution, period, but take courage, I have overcome the world," unquote. Jesus, quoted by John, chapter 16, verse 33. Last statement from John's Gospel has kept me sane over the years. As we know, in the science of linguistics, there's a root syllable, and even minus the vowels, which identifies the essence of the idea behind the word. Here it is, the letters FRT. Fortitude. Same linguistic root, fort. Same linguistic root, fortress. If there's one illusion to which we can all be so deeply and constantly subject, is the illusion of thinking we're living in, well, a quiet, peaceful, and a loving society. We are to love, but don't you dare think that everybody will love you. And the more faithful, believe you me, I know what I'm talking about. The more faithful we are in the following of Jesus Christ, the more loyal to his teaching, the more zealous to propagate the gospel, the more the world will oppose you. Over the years, God has taught me a great deal. One thing I've learned, in the measure that you are faithful to Jesus Christ, and I add, and zealous zealous to promote his name, the more the world will oppose you. In the opposition, you'll come, not even mainly, surely not mostly, from the obvious enemies of Christianity. Remember what our Lord told us. If you're going to be faithful to me among your most difficult persons to cope with, will be members of your own household. Thanks, dear Lord, thanks. It makes my life intelligible. And by now, you've all learned all kinds of subtle, shrewd ways. Well, as the expression goes, of keeping old friends. With all kinds of results. But one traumatic consequence is that so many millions in our own nation who are starving for the truth never hear the truth, because those who have the true faith, pardon the words, are cowards. I think I've shared this at least with some of you. I was teaching theology for 11 years to my own Jesuit scholastics. And I was told by my superiors to pay my respects to the administrators of a state university in Michigan. Spent 3 days with them to be interviewed by them whether I was qualified to teach at a state university. Well, given the vow of obedience, I obeyed. For 3 days, I was told how I was to teach. How to teach Catholic theology among the norms they gave me: never wear your priestly garb again, never show your commitment to the Catholic faith. Before the 3 days were over, I was convinced the last time I would see, pardon me, these buggers. I would report back to my Jesuit convention, which I did. Probably obvious by the third day, Dr. Harden, that's my alias, is not interested in teaching at the state university. Before I got to my provincial superior, pardon me, I changed the word. Those bums called him my Jesuit superior and told him he wanted Dr. Harden and he'll abide by his conditions. I lasted 4 years and one semester. By the third semester, 7 full-time professors in the Department of Philosophy and Religion, an optional course in the department. By the third semester, I had most of the students, a large hall seating over 200 students. It is to say, I got into trouble. You can find a copy in some library, read at least a few pages of a book that this sinner published, The Hungry Generation. My students, starving for the truth, most of them, of course, not Catholic, many not even Christians, starving for the truth, and they loved it. I have never in my life, having taught over the years, received such long 60, 70, 75 page term papers pouring off their souls, starving for the truth. That's why I debated whether I should call the book The Hungry or the Starving Generation. You're on the virtue, remember, of justice. With the depths of my soul, I plead with you, make some definite, clear decisions about practicing the justice that we Catholics are to exercise in sharing with others. We have a duty before God to share the truth that God in His mercy has so generously given to us. Hear it. All true believers, all true believers come from other true believers. As St. Paul says, I like the Latin, fides ex auditu. Faith comes from hearing. But somebody must do the speaking, otherwise there is nothing to hear. In other words, as you see, I am loath to leave this virtue of, well, here, the fortitude it takes to practice the justice of sharing with others what God has given to us, not to be hugged by ourselves, but to be communicated to everyone, and I mean that literally, everyone who enters our lives. On the plane coming in from Detroit, men helped to take my heavy bag down and bring it down to the floor. So I thanked him. I didn't ask whether he was Jewish or Muslim or Lutheran. I'll say 10 Hail Marys for you. If he doesn't know what a Hail Mary is, I'm sure he'll find out. But you must have the courage, the fortitude, to respect and respond to the rights of others, especially the supernatural rights which they have to the truth and the corresponding duty we have, and the courage it takes. Only God knows. We have one more moral virtue, temperance. You know, what I'm doing is synthesizing what the Catechism of the Catholic Church tells us here in answer to the question, what is temperance? Temperance moderates our desires. It moderates the attraction of pleasure, bodily, emotional, and spiritual. Say that again. Temperance moderates the attraction of pleasure, bodily, emotional, and spiritual. You mean we're supposed to moderate our spiritual desires? As I told my students in teaching Latin, ito. That's the Latin word for yes. Ito. I mean this. The greatest joy on earth for me is being alone with our Lord in the Holy Eucharist. And I think I told you about St. Ignatius. He was not always a saint. What a safe statement. He was converted. And after conversion, he had mystical experiences. But nothing had much education. He had to go back to grammar school to study his Spanish grammar. He was bored. 30-year-old man learning basic Spanish grammar. So he would have listened to this, a temptation to experience an ecstasy. Mother, you must be joking. No. He had to resist those raptures, resist those mystical experiences, which were so much more pleasant than listening to a professor spouting about the elements of basic grammar. How much work we all have to do. And whatever you do during this retreat, be sure you ask our Lord always through Our Lady to let you know what blessed experiences in your life need to be controlled. Is it possible? I'm asking a question. Is it possible for a person to, well, indulge. What a verb. Indulge in devout prayer and not do some of the obligations of his or her life. Yes. And we're talking about, of course, supernatural prudence. In other words, the pleasures we are to control are not only bodily and not only intellectual. And the more intellectual a person is, the more they like to think and think and think. Pardon me, and think. Love to think. I say this with a lifetime experience. For the retreat is over. Examine yourselves on your use of time. How am I using my time? As I've said so many times, given our natural impulses,